Greetings and welcome back to another ongoing series of Shiurim on Daf Yomi. My name is Yitzchak Shalom. We are now in Masachet Gittin on Daf Lamed Dalet Amud Bet in the middle of Mishnah Bet. I failed to point out in the beginning of our study of this parak that the first Mishnah that we dealt with was really two Mishnayot, or shall we say the first Mishnah and then the first half of Mishnah Bet. So here's the second half of Mishnah Bet, Barishonah Hayam Shanesh Shmo Ushma. The wording here is a little bit awkward, but originally, and again we're dealing with Gittin, originally he would write only his name and her name. Literally he would change his name and her name. What the intent of this is that if he were known by a particular name where he lived, and so were she, but they were known by other names in the place where he was writing the get, he would write it as per the way that he was known locally. And therefore, if he was known by another name, it would not appear on the get. Shem Yiro was Shem Yira, the same thing with his city and her city that may have had variant names or variant ways of being referred to. Hikin Rabban Gamliel Hazaken, Shei Kotev Ish Ploni V'chol Shum Sheyesh Lo, Ish Ploni V'chol Shum Sheyesh Lam Nei Tikun HaOlam. So in order to make sure that we had an exact identification of the man and of the woman, Gamliel Hazaken made another takana about the get, which is that he must write his name, and v'chol shum sheyesh lo, any name that he has. There are three ways of reading this piska. Most of the Rishonim say that he actually wrote that. Chaim Yankel, and any name by which he is known, to indicate that he had other names by which he was known. And the same thing with the woman. Some Rishonim, like Rabbeinu Tam, for instance, read the Mishnah as a template, and meaning that you would write Chaim Yaakov, also known as Moshe, etc., etc. There's support to that from the piece, small piece of the Gemara that we'll see. And then there is a sort of hybrid sheet of the Ravid in which you have to write both, which is, if you're chiefly known by two or three names, you have to write them and also write the tagline and any other name by which he's known. Now, Amar Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Shachule B'nei Medinat Hayam L'Rabban Gamliel. We get now a little bit of a background into where this takana came from. As opposed to the first takana of not canceling a get in the absence of the shaliach, where we were not told any story of a tragedy that that caused the takana, here we find out that people from Medinat Hayam, from Greece, Italy, wherever it was in the Mediterranean, sent a message to Rabban Gamliel, Bnei Adam HaBaim Misham Lekan, people who come from Eretz Yisrael to here. Shmo Yosef Korin Lo Yochanan. His real name is Yosef, but here they call him Yochanan. Yochanan Korin Lo Yosef, vice versa. Heach Megarshin Nashotehan. What are we going to do about them divorcing their wives? Meaning that if they use the name by which they're known in their hometown, we don't recognize them here, and vice versa. Rabban Gamliel v'hitkin she'u kodvin ish ploni v'chol shum she'yesh lo. So Rabban Gamliel then made the takana. So it was not really occasioned by a particular tragic instance, as opposed to a chronic problem that was pointed out to in a communication from B'dei Medinat Hayam. Ish ploni v'chol shum she'yesh lo. Nei tikun ha'olam. Amar Rav Ashi v'hu de'itchazek b'trei shami. Rav Ashi says this is only true if he's really known by both names, not if in one place they once in a while call him by a nickname. Amalei Rabbi Abba Rav Ashi, Rabbi Mari v'Rabbi Lazar kaimi kavatach. These two other Amoraim agree with you that it must be real names. Tanya kavatei Rav Ashi. We have a braita that supports that as well. Hayulo shtei nashim. Let's say he had two wives. Achat b'Yehuda, achat b'Galil. One in the south, one in the north. V'lo shtei shemot. He's also known by two different names. Achat b'Yehuda, achat b'Galil. One in the south and one in the north. This could very likely be because of dialect, etc. V'gireshet ishto sh'b'Yehuda b'shmo sh'b'Yehuda. If he divorced his wife in Yehuda and he used his Judean name in the get, v'ishto sh'b'Galil b'shmo sh'b'Galil, and he divorced his northern wife with the name by which he's known in the north, einam megureshet, it's not valid, meaning after the takana, v'gireshet ishto sh'b'Yehuda b'shmo sh'b'Yehuda v'shem de'Galil imo. Now notice, this seems to support Rabbeinu Tam, where you don't just write your Judean name and any other name by which I'm known, but you have to write explicitly the Galilean name. You have to write both names, the first name being the name by which you're known locally, the second by which the name by which you're known in the other region. Now, Yatzalam akom acher, but if you went to some third place, v'gireish be'achad mihen, megureshet. If you used either name, then megureshet. How can that be? V'amar shem de Galilimo. You said just now that you have to write the other name with it. The only way to resolve this Braita is to say that the first clause of the Braita with Yehudan Galil, the main clause, is where you're really known by both names, and those names are official names that you have. Whereas the last clause, where you went to another place, that's talking about a situation where you're only really known by your regular name, and you have nicknames here and there, and those are insignificant, and they don't have to be mentioned, thus supporting Rav Ashi's distinction. Hahi dehavu karila Miriam. There's a story about a woman who was called Miriam. Upurta Sarah. Few people would call her Sarah. Amri Nahardeus. So the Nahardeans were the remainders of the remaining students of the Nahardean yeshiva after it was destroyed, who moved into Pumbadita, and they had her own row in the yeshiva called the Nahardei. They said Miriam b'chol shum sheishla. It has to be written Miriam and every name she has. Now this supports the reading against Rabbeinu Tam. You don't write the specific names. You just write an indication that there are other names. V'lo Sarah b'chol shum sheishla. And you don't write the minority name, meaning the name by which she's known by a few people, and then kol shum sheishla. You write the name by which she's mainly known. Okay. Now the next Mishnah Gimel will lead us to three takanot, only the second one of which is directly get. The first one has to do with issues vaguely related, and the third one has nothing to do with it, and we will only be able to look at an analysis of the first two, here. Ein oman nifrat nichsei yitomim ela b'shvuah. In fact, in the rest of this podcast, we'll only be looking at the beginning of the first takanah. The halacha is, and this we saw in Ketubot, Perek Tet, that an almana may not collect her ketubah from the estate of the orphans, of the heirs, without taking a shvua, to wit that she has not collected anything from the ketubah, or she's only collected a certain amount, and she's now asking for the rest. She must take an oath. Then the halacha became that they stopped administering oath. They refused to administer an oath. We'll see why. So then, Hitkin Rabban Gamliel Hazakein, Shetehno Deret La Yitomim, Kol Mashi Yirtzu, Vegovak Tuvatat. Gamliel Hazakein, the same Rabban Gamliel Hazakein, made a takana that the woman should take a vow to anything that the Yitomim require. Like the Yitomim can say, you take a vow that you'll never eat anything again, or that you'll never sleep again, whatever it might be, that she'll say, if indeed I have used more than the amount that I'm claiming I used or collected from the ketubah, then some exorbitant thing is prohibited to me. That they allowed to do. V'govak tuvatan, then she can collect. That is the first one of the tikkuni olam. Haidim chotmim al gemnei tikkun ha'olam, v'lahidkin proves b'mnei tikkun ha'olam. So haidim chotmim al gemnei tikkun ha'olam we'll deal with in the next podcast, and then following that we will deal with the issue of prusbul, so we're going to leave those two alone for right now. Okay, my iria almana. The question is, why is it that they only refuse to administer an oath to an almana? Clearly the concern was that people are not going to be honest under oath. So why do we pick on a widow and say she won't be honest under oath, and therefore she cannot take an oath? After all, nobody can ever collect from an estate without taking an oath. So, why are you mentioning almana? The answer is, almana yitzterichale salkadaita chameina mishum china akilu barabonin. In the case of an almana, of a widow, we would think that in order to enhance her grace in the eyes of other suitors, so that she would be easier for her to get married again, maybe we would be lenient and allow her to collect without taking a shvuah. So that's why she needs to take a shvuah. Now, Kamash Malan, Nimna Umi Lahashbiya. So now this is the clause, my time. Why did the rabbis at some point refuse to administer an oath to an almana, putting her in an impossible bind, which is she cannot collect the ketubah without taking a shvuah, but we refuse to allow her to take a shvuah? If it's because of this ruling, there's a story about a man. During a famine, he had a gold coin. He gave it to an almana to watch. She put it in her empty, we would assume, empty flour jug. In the end, she got some flour. She put it in there, and she ended up baking it and baked it in some bread, that she ended up giving to a poor guy. Liamim ba balha dinar v'amarla havili dinari. So the guy came back later and said, give me my coin. Amrale yehenesam hamavet be'achad mi baneha shalota isha. It's a terrible curse, which is basically saying one of my children should die. Imnehaneitmi dinar chaklum. She says, I don't know where it is, but I got no benefit from it whatsoever. I'm taking an oath that if I got any benefit whatsoever from your dinar, one of my children should die. What happened? Amrulo hayu yamim latina chemeta charmaneha. Not long afterwards, one of her children died. So Chacham heard about this, and they said, look, here's somebody who takes an oath to tell the truth. We'll see what this means. Certainly if somebody lies under oath, they will be punished terribly. Now, my time at Yansha, so why was she punished? After all, she did not get any benefit from the coin. The coin, as far as she knew, was lost. She didn't know that it was in the flour and that she had baked it. So what benefit did she get? The answer is Dishtar Shila Makom Dinar. It's a very fine distinction. We say that amount of dough that was taken up by the size of the coin was amount she had saved. If she was going to normally bake a dough of 5 pounds, she now baked slightly less volume and saved a little bit because of the dinar. Of course, she did not know it was there. So she really did get some minuscule benefit from the dinar, and therefore she was punished. Now, my Mishnish Babemet, so why are they saying, here's somebody who took an oath to tell the truth? It's not really true. The answer is Kim Mishnish Babemet, meaning she intended to tell the truth. She didn't know that she was not telling the truth. So if you think that that's the reason, because of that very strange case with the Almana who took the oath, Ma'ir Yalmana, that it shouldn't be limited to an Almana. Just because the case happened with a widow, that's happenstance. Such a thing could happen with anybody, that somebody would take an oath that they were on the up and up, and they didn't realize that they weren't on the up and up, and so therefore we say, you know what, we can't administer oaths, it should be to anyone. So Afilu Grushanami, certainly a divorcee should not be able to take an oath and collect from the estate. So why did Shmuel say that our Mishnah only applies, our ruling only applies to an Almanah, but a Grusha may take an oath? So why is it that we limit the prohibition or the restriction of taking an oath to an Almanah? The answer is Almanah Shani Debahi Hanah De Katarcha Kamediatmi Atyaluri Hatera. The answer is that people always rationalize things for themselves. And since the Almanah is living on the estate, and she bakes for the kids, and she cleans their house perhaps, and she maybe does their laundry, whatever it may be, she'll say, you know what, Magiali something, I really deserve something. So she'll be a little bit flexible with her accounting. And therefore we say, you know what, we're not going to let her take an oath, because she will take an oath swearing that she only got this amount or she got nothing. And in reality, she took a little more, but she believes that she's deserving of it. Therefore, we're not going to allow her. Grusha, of course, is off the estate. She has no reason to be moreheter in such a way. Rav Yehuda Amar Rav Yirmiyah Bar Abba, Rav Ushmuel Damri Tavayhu. Now, according to Rav Yehuda, Rav Ushmuel said, Lo Shanu Ela Beveitin, that this is only true in Beitin. Avachutz LeBeitin Mashpin Otah. If the orphans catch up with her outside of Beitin and they're willing to administer an oath, that's fine. It's only in the court we won't allow such a thing. That's their position, according to Rav Yehuda. Aini, is that really true? Rav lo magbi ketuba lo amalta. Rav would never allow an almanah to collect a ketuba, which means that in no circumstances could we make the oath. So, Kasha, you know, that's a little bit of a problem. Now, Basura matnu hachi, that's how they read the story in Surah. And in Surah, Rav city, they said both Rav and Shmuel agreed that we do not administer the oath. That we do allow administering the oath outside of the Beit Din. But in Ardea, Matnu Hachi, but in Mardea, they read it as follows. Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Lo Shanu Ela Beveitin. Chutz Lebeitin Mashpin Ota. V'Rav Amar Filu Chutz Lebeitin Nami En Mashpin Ota. According to this, Shmuel said that we do not allow her we do not administer the oath in Beitin, but outside of Beitin we do. And Rav said we don't allow the oath to be administered anywhere. And in that case, Rav Latame, now Rav is consistent. Rav Lamabi Ktuba Lamalta. Rav would never allow a Ktuba to be collected. In other words, because Rav was of the position that an Almanah could not take the oath even outside of Beit Din. Therefore, there was no way for an Almanah to take it. However, in Nahardea, the way they read it was that Shmuel said, yes, she may, outside of Beit Din. Okay, keep that in mind as we get to the next piece. V'le'adre v'ligbe, parenthetically say, according to Rav, why don't we just do the neder thing? If he's not, he doesn't allow them to do the oath, why not the neder thing? Shanei de Rav, kili nadu. The answer is that during Rav's period, people were very lenient and sort of flaunting of nedarim, and therefore he would not administer a neder either because of that. All right. Hahida atoy lekame de Rav Huna. So there was a woman who came to Rav Huna. Remember, Rav Huna was a Talmud Muvik of Rav. Amarla ma'avidlach. What should I do for you? The Rav lamabi ktuba l'armal. The Rav would not allow a ktuba to be collected for an almanah. So Amarle midi hutaima eladilma nakitna midi diktuati. I know the reason, Rav's reason. He's afraid that maybe I took something during the period between the husband's death and now that I collected something from the ktuba. She goes, Chai Hashem tzfa'otim nehneti biktuati klum. On the spot, she jumped ahead and took an oath. Initiated an oath and said, I did not get any benefit. Rav Huna, Moda Rav Bekofetzet. Rav agrees that if she initiates the oath, that she jumps ahead literally and takes the oath, then we can give her the ketubah, and we did. Now, second story. Now it's Rav Huna's son. A woman came to him. Same story. She said, I want to collect my ketubah. Amar la mayavidlach. What can I do for you? Derav la magbi ketubah lar malta. After all, my father's Rebbe said, you can't do it. Ve'abba mori lo magbi ktuva lar malta. And my father also didn't allow it. So Amrale, so she said, so havli mazoni, so at least give me the, from the estate, give me a food stipend. Amarla mazoni nami leilach. I can't give you mazonot. Why? There's a halacha we saw also in the ninth parak of Ktuvot. The minute that a woman claims her ktuba, she loses her rights to mazonot. However, that, remember, was based on Shmuel. All right, so now let's see how this plays out. Amrale afchu halakurse. She cursed Rabba Bar Avuna and said, your chair should be turned upside down. Kevetre avdali, because you're hurting me using two opposing positions. You're using Rav's position that won't allow me to collect the ketubah, and then you're using Shmuel's position. And Shmuel, by the way, did not agree with Rav about that. He said, you could administer the oath outside of Beit Din. And said, and you're using Shmuel against me to say, once I claim my ketubah, I can't get mezonot. Hafchu ala korsei v'tertzuha. So in order to appease her, they turned his chair upside down for a minute just to kind of let the oath be fulfilled. Filo achilo ifrak micholsha. Nonetheless, he didn't feel any better. He realized he had this curse was very strong. So now Amar Rav Yehuda Rav Yirmiyah Bira. Watch this. Adra beveitin v'ashba chutz lebeitin. To support Shmuel's position, he said, "I want you to administer the vow in Beitin, and then outside of the Beitin, administer an oath to her, just like Shmuel said." V'leite kola v'lipo buudni. And I want to hear about it myself. I want literally the voice to come and fall into my ears that I know that she collected her ketubah. Deba'ina kihecha diavid b'maisa. I want to make sure it gets taken care of. Okay, so now that's the sort of how we conclude the piece. We're going to go back and look at one thing Shmuel said. We said that this restriction only applies to an almana. Aval grusha mashbiinota. A grusha can have the yeshua. So grusha da adralo. What you're saying? We don't do the neder with a grusha. We go right to a shvua and administer a shvua. After all, hashalchu mitam. We had a document that came from Eretz Yisrael. Ich plonita, bat ploni, I, this particular woman, kabilat gilta gita min yada da acha bar hidya, I gotta get from this particular man, timitkari ayamari, he had another name, v'nadrat v'asrat perot sheba olam ala. And she took an oath of all perot ha'olam, to kabilat miktubata ela glufkara echad, that she had only collected one particular piece, v'sefer Tehilim Echad, and a scroll of Psalms, v'sefer Eov, memshalot bluim, particular things that she had gotten. In other words, we had a document that said that this particular woman was divorced, she got a get from this guy, and she had taken a vow that she, all perot in the world would be also to her if she had collected anything more than, and she listed a few items that she had collected from him. So you see that a grusha also has to bypass the oath and take the neder. Ushmanu b'chamishim manah, b'chamisha manah, we measure them, the value of them all was 5 manah, which means she should be getting the rest of her that in ketubah. And so when she comes to you in Bavel, give her to collect the rest from the husband's estate. So you see that a grusha does not take the oath and instead has to go to the root of the neder. That case was a get yevamin, meaning that was a woman whose husband had died. She was an almana, but she fell to the brothers for yibum, and the brothers invalidated her by doing mamar, or by one brother doing mamar, and then another, they invalidated her. So the brother who had given her mamar had to give her a get, and that get yevamin was what was referred to in this context. And the collection was really the collection from her dead husband's estate. In other words, she was acting as an almana, and there, of course, she did have to take the neder because we wouldn't allow her to take the shvua because of the consideration that we had earlier on. Okay, in the next podcast, we'll pick up and take a look at the first of the takanot, which is the neder, and the second of the takanot Rav Gamliel had, which is to have edim chotmim al haget v'tikun ha'olam. Everyone should have a wonderful day.